From somewhere in the Houston Midtown area, it's The Sit Down with Slick Vic.
Welcome, everyone. It's The Sit Down with me, Slick Vic. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Today, I'm joined with an old friend, my buddy Richard Kemp. Richard, thanks for coming on the show.
Cool, man. Thanks, Vic. Yeah.
So how have you been, Richard? You for the people out there, Richard works in the service industry. He is currently at B&B Butchers, correct, Richard?
Yeah, man. I've been there a little over 2.5 years now. It's been pretty good, slinging steaks and wine.
Yeah, what a life. Talk a little bit about how you got to that establishment. Before that, you were at Smith & Walensky's, correct?
Yeah, Smith & Walensky is another steakhouse. I actually started there at their Las Vegas location back in, I think that was like 2010, somewhere around there.
2010. How old were you at the time?
Let's see, I was 26.
Was that your first job in the industry?
In the fine dine steakhouse, but I've been in the industry since I was 15, probably. Yeah, 16.
And I recall you told me before once, you've pretty much been in the industry since then, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
What were you doing when you were 15, 16? What was the job that got you in?
TGI Fridays. Shout out. I was a busser.
Yeah, man. I remember when the first service job I ever got was at Cheddar's over there off of West Park. Shout out to Cheddar's. And my buddy Diesel, he was working there at the time, and he was like, "Hey, man, just go in there and apply and mention me, and you'll be fine." But I just remember when I was looking at the experience, I was like, well, I don't have any experience, so I'm just going to make something up. And I just said I worked at my uncle's restaurant. He did have a restaurant. I just never worked there.
Right, right.
And that worked. It got me in the door.
That's it.
But I never, I always thought about how hard the busers work, man. The busers bust their fucking ass off, though.
Yeah, we did a lot of dicking around too. I mean, any leftover food, we were eating it. Anytime we had a little 5-10 minute break, we're probably taking it. I mean, we're fucking 16 years old.
Yeah. No, the restaurant life is an interesting one at best. So, Richard, you grew up in New Mexico, right?
Yeah, 505, baby. Yeah, Albuquerque, Burke.
What was it like growing up in New Mexico?
Man, it was cool. Smaller town, of course, compared to Houston. Great culture, great food. Yeah, I love New Mexico, man.
Does it? I mean, I'm assuming, I've never been there, but I know Houston has a lot of Latinos. Same with Albuquerque, a lot of Latinos.
Yeah. Probably a little different, though. Kind of Houston has a lot of different Latinos from all over, the world. Compared to maybe New Mexico is basically just Mexican and New Mexicans. So you're not going to get too much diversity there in that aspect.
That's cool. You and I met working at a Federal Grill. Shout out to Matt Bryce. And I recall we used to talk a lot about sports.
Yep.
What sports were you into early on?
Man, I did everything actually growing up. I mean, I think probably my first sport might have been probably like T-ball, And then right after that, I got into taekwondo and started getting into martial arts. But, it was everything. It was football, youth football. It was track and field. And then high school wrestling, and kept with the wrestling and football. And yeah, so, anything I get my hands on, I was doing.
What would you say you liked best?
Man, I love football. I love strapping the pads on.
What position did you play?
A lot of defense. So it was either cornerback, safety, outside linebacker. I kind of moved around a lot because I was that in-between guy. I loved to hit, but I was a little bit smaller, so they just kind of float me around.
Yeah, that's good when you're doing the hitting and not getting hit, right?
Yeah, you want to be that hammer.
Yeah, it definitely usually works out better for you.
Yep.
So you get into the service industry as a busboy, eventually moving up to server. Where did you make your server debut? What place were you at when you did that?
Man, I got to think about that. I don't know, tell you the truth. It might have been this place called Elephant Bar, which is like a California-based restaurant, very similar to Cheesecake Factory, if you've ever been to Cheesecake Factory.
I worked there, yes.
Yeah. Huge menu, a lot of everything on there. But I think it was Elephant Bar. And I was, 19, somewhere around there. I worked at a lot of places in Albuquerque. I mean, I worked at probably 15 different restaurants at one point. It was like every 6 months to a year, I was just popping out to a new restaurant because it was just a restaurant job to me, you know?
Right. So you were doing the merry-go-round of restaurants in Albuquerque. So eventually, like you mentioned earlier, you ended up in Las Vegas, the city where dreams are made and broken.
Man, and I've seen a lot more broken than made, I tell you that much.
So what brought you to Vegas?
Short story. My sister married into the military, and she's my only sibling. We were pretty close. And when she had a kid and they moved out there to Vegas, I didn't have any more family in Albuquerque at the time. So I was like, well, shit, let's go to Vegas. And so I moved out there, and it was a lot tougher and bigger than I first thought it was going to be. Absolutely. It was Vegas is another monster. We'll just put it that way.
I know you and I like to entertain wagers when it came to the sports games. When I first met you, I always just saw it as a way to pass the time. We're at work, we're making money working, right? But at the same time, let's make work interesting, let's make the game interesting. So we did a little side wager sometimes. Now in Vegas, I can only imagine the temptation. Were you intrigued by that?
It's just easy, man. I remember the first time on how common it was. I'd be at work and guys just talking about the bets they had just placed and show me their tickets. And it was an everyday thing. And so I caught on real quick because I love sports. And you would, right down the street working from MGM, working at Smith & Wolensky, I'd go make a bet before I went to work, or I'd be at work and it'd be dead. I'm like, I'm gonna go make a bet real quick on tonight's basketball game. So yeah, we did a lot of sports betting out there.
Smith & Wolensky. So that's a place that I know you were affiliated with for a long time. How did that, I think you told me you started as a busboy there. How did that all begin? You just apply there one day?
Well, I mean, another crazy story, I guess. One of my buddies moved out to Houston when he was 16. Me and him grew up with each other in Albuquerque for that, since like first grade we knew each other. And he moved out to Houston. He got a job at Smith & Wolensky, and they had a location in Vegas. He knew I was having a hard time, trying to find a job. And so he put a word in for me, and they finally gave me an opportunity for an interview. They only offered me a busser position. I was like, fuck it. I couldn't find a job, so I just jumped in. And it was like a probationary thing. So I was a busser for a little while. Then I had to become a food runner. Took forever to finally become a server. It was like a year and a half later, and they finally gave me an opportunity. But it was good.
It was a very busy establishment, right?
Oh, yeah. We were right on the strip, man. I mean, you get all walks of life coming in, from conventions, big whales, to tourists. You name it. All kinds of people coming in.
And so you were there, and then you like you said, over a little over a year until you became a server. How long did you work there?
Well, at the Vegas location, I was there for 3 years. And then I transferred over because, once again, I didn't have any more family in Vegas. And you do 3-4 years in Vegas, and that's it. You're like, all right, next. Well, at least I was.
Yeah, no.
So since my buddy lived out here in Houston that I've known for so long, he's like, come out here. I said, cool. I gave Houston a shot. So, I've been here for 6-7 years now.
Yeah, man. You see anything crazy going on in the where you were working there at Smith & Wolensky's? I mean, it's Vegas.
Yeah, man, you see all kinds of crazy shit for sure. I mean, we had this one thing called the kitchen table, right? And so basically it was just a room with one table with like 8 chairs. So you can like rent it out. That way you can kind of sit in the kitchen area with glass walls around. You can see all the kitchen stuff going on. Well, a couple of times there's escorts in there with, you know, high profile dudes, and they're doing blow off each other and crazy. And, you know, we're letting it roll because whatever, they're paying 10, 15 grand for maybe a bottle of wine and whatever, badass steak or something like that, you know. So, hey, you know, a little blow off a hooker's titty, that's cool. Whatever. It's Vegas.
Yeah, man. Vegas just has that reputation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Vegas. Yeah. Bachelor parties with dudes showing up with freaking no shoes, no shirts, because all these daytime beach parties going on all the time in Vegas. So you see a lot of daytime drinking. They can't show up to their own party.
It's fun. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Vegas.
Okay, so then you decide to come to Houston because you said your buddy was down here.
Yeah, and just said, fuck it. I mean, I'm, you know, single dude. I was down to kind of travel around at the time. I'd never even, you know, been out here to Houston. And so I said, screw it. Let's come out to Houston. Transferred out to the Smith & Wolinski here.
And how did you like Houston, man? I mean, you haven't left, so I'm assuming things...
it's a 180 from Vegas, though, I'll tell you the truth. I mean, definitely from size and, like, weather and stuff like that. It's like a 180. And the people, too. Vegas people are real strange. They're kind of like California people. No offense, but you're weird. Houston people, a lot more down to earth. When they say that Southern hospitality, they weren't lying. People here are real nice, for sure.
All right, that's cool.
And I met my wife here, so that's crazy.
Yeah, you met your wife here. You recently had a little baby girl, right?
Yeah, man, little baby girl. Shout out to Emma.
So, yeah, man, this has been pretty crazy. So I met you at Federal Girl, like I said earlier. At the time, though, you were still at Smith & Wolinski's, right?
Yeah, I was working 2 jobs.
And unfortunately, Smith & Wolinski's at that location closed down, but you rebounded pretty well.
Yeah, man. I mean, luckily I made some good networking connections while I was working at Smith & Wolinski, and kind of found out they were going under before they went under, and made a jump ship real quick over to B&B Butchers. They've been absolutely amazing for me so far. It's been a real smooth transition. But it was nice because I had some of the people working already at B&B Butchers that were at Smith & Wolinski beforehand, so it was good.
Yeah, man, let's talk a little bit about B&B Butchers. I actually worked for the Annie, which was a sister company, I would say.
Yeah, I call it that.
A B&B Butchers. And so I really like the people they brought over. You know, there were some people that were former employees of B&B Butchers. I thought their management staff was A1, you know, the way they do things, you know, especially someone like you.
Was Martin over there?
Martin was over there. Craig.
Yeah, he runs it right. Oh, yeah, and Craig's a good guy, too.
Absolutely. Shout out to Martin. Shout out to Craig. but no, man, it was a great establishment to work for. I really enjoyed my time there, especially seeing it really come. It wasn't from the ground up, right? Because that establishment existed before. But it was like a complete makeover.
Yeah, it was a new thing. It was a complete
a reincarnation.
Yeah, a rising. It was like the phoenix, man, like the flames. You know, they had to do a real reinventation of themselves. It was good though.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. The time that I was there, they actually reached out to me recently. I told them that, you know, right now I'm currently working for the government. I'll just leave it at that, folks.
The man.
And I have a job in IT lined up. So, but I told him if anything changes, you know, I'll keep them in mind. You know, I really enjoyed my time there. So you leave Smith & Wolinski's before the ship sinks, go to B&B Butchers. And how long have you been there now?
Like a little over about 2.5 years.
Yeah, two and a half years.
Yeah.
About that, yeah. I really enjoy eating there. I've had my birthday there. I've had my mom's birthday there. It's just you know, really good service, really good ambiance and decor.
And the food's really good, man.
Oh, I mean, the food's got to be good, right?
Yeah, I mean, it makes my job so much easier. But the food, I mean, not even just to be biased, it's good.
No, I completely agree. And then they have their own butcher shop.
Right. Right. It's a little bit easy when you got your deli and butcher shop connected right to the steakhouse. Just makes everything.
Who is Tommy the butcher, or he's just a chef? Was he both?
Well, he's our executive, so he's both, man, because he's in the butcher shop still to this day. I mean, I seen him yesterday just slicing up steaks straight from Japan, you know, because he oversees a lot of that. When we import our meat from Japan, he's the one that does a lot of the butchering too.
So, you know, that's kind of what drew me to that place. I remember, I don't know if he's still there, Jeremiah.
Yeah. Jeremiah Butler. He's our bar manager.
He came into Federal when I was working at Federal. You know, this was many moons ago. And, you know, we just started, it was him and his wife, and we just started talking. And he was like, yeah, he told me a little bit about B&Bs. And he was like, yeah, you know, we got this cut of meat that is only the only place in Texas. Like, I think at the time it was like four or five places in the whole country that even carried it.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably bumped up a little bit now, but.
Right.
We're still doing, I mean, we just brought on, man, this a bone-in 85, 16-ounce ribeye. And it's like, I think Chef Tommy was telling me there's only maybe one other place in Vegas that's doing like a bone-in dry, oh, I'm sorry, it's dry age for 28 days, an A5 bone-in 16-ounce ribeye dry age for 20 days. It's a crazy steak. $300, man, and it's worth every penny, I tell you that much. It's sick.
What is it that... Is it the texture? Is it just the flavor combination? What separates when you're talking about? Because you know, there's expensive steaks, right? You go to you know, Papa's. You know, well, Papa's has like the fancy ones too, but just you know, like a $50-$60 steak, and then you talk about what you're talking about, 300 and even more, just crazy numbers. What is it that makes that steak so good, and what separates it from even a $50-$60 steak?
I mean, I think there's just a few things. For one, it's from Japan, so there's that allure that, you know, you're having something that's foreign that you can't have here. You know, the marbling, you know, that fat content that's in that steak, it renders down like at room temperature. It's just super delicate stuff, so it's real creamy, it's real buttery. It's a different bite than when you would get like a Black Angus. You kind of have to chew through your steak. This stuff is just, it's just smooth. Now, to be honest with you, I like a Black Angus, or I like, you know, an American Wagyu, because I want a little bit of that Black Angus influence in my steak. I think sometimes that freaking Japanese is too rich, but you get 4 ounces of it here and there. Yeah, man, that stuff's awesome. It's some good stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure it goes well with a nice bottle of red, right?
Heck yes. Or whiskey. I prefer a little bit of whiskey. I think it goes real well with some whiskey or some bourbon too.
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit hungry.
There we go.
Yeah, no, I love me a good steak, man. Mm-hmm. And you know, your restaurant definitely knows how to do it.
Oh yeah, one of the best.
So let's talk about some current events.
Yeah.
Currently, we are in the time post-COVID.
Post-current.
Post-current COVID.
Right? I mean, I haven't been paying attention as much, so I'll go with you on the post, just because I'm just not paying attention as much.
Actually, you know what? It's actually still current COVID. It's not post.
Yeah, it's not post. I don't know. Yeah, no, it's current. It's current.
I'll probably just edit that up. But we're just so we're in this current COVID situation. My restaurant, you know, the Annie, was shut down for a little while. They have reopened to limited capacity, but it definitely had a huge impact on all restaurants, regardless, right?
Yep.
Talk about how you feel it's different now. Like, I'm assuming things are a little bit slower. Obviously, you have the protocol, the safety protocol, but can you just talk about a little bit of the changes that you're currently facing?
I mean, when we first got on, of course, back May 21st, day one, when we first came back to work, everything was still on high alert. You know, we were wearing gloves, you know, every time we did a new, you know, job, whether it was like, you know, making coffee, we had to change our gloves, getting new drinks for a table or new gloves, busing a table, new gloves, you know, of course, wearing our mask at all times. It's kind of like eased up a little bit, as if, because we're not wearing our gloves now anymore, it's up to us if we want to wear them. I mean, I still wash my hands on a regular basis, and I don't touch my face. But we have to wear the mask, you know, so that's the same thing. We're still sanitizing, you know, after every single guest, you know, comes to the table, the chair, the tables, the legs. We definitely take it up a notch for sure. And, you know, the guests have seen that for sure too. They've seen that, how much we're making sure everybody's safe.
I mean, obviously you're going to adapt, right? You're going to, whatever you need to do to get the job done, you're going to do. Yep. But how have the people responded? Have you seen any type of frustration or just anybody just being like, oh, why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? Have you seen any pushback?
It's a mix and match. I think some people aren't really caring as much, you know, and they're just doing what they have to do. They're putting the mask on. And then when they sit down, they can take it off and they can act normal. Some people are, you know, taken to the extreme where they're bringing in their own wipes or their own Lysol and stuff like that. But, you know, I have my own thoughts on that. You know, if you're that worried, you know, I don't know about, you know, being in a confinement area with a bunch of people eating, drinking. But, no, I think in the most part, people that want to come out to eat, or they're just coming out to eat and they're not worried about it, but they're trying to be respectful of others. It's been very, very slim about people coming in, not giving a fuck, you know. People were wearing their masks. They've been cool.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, they've been cool.
I mean, especially because, you know, that privilege was removed from everyone for a little while, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there was no going out to eat. There was a point in time where there was a lot of confusion. There was a lot of misinformation.
Yep.
And it was just very difficult to make an accurate assessment when you're just getting fed just different types of information. So how do you feel in terms of, are you guys doing like limited seating still?
Yeah, we're at 50% inside and 100% on the patio. So, I mean, we're complying, you know, with state regulations, but we're ready as soon as everybody says we're open 100%, we're going to open 100%. You know, we're ready to roll.
Are you basically not allowing enough people to have reservations because you have that, like,
yeah, we're having to go on Open Table and just kind of completely cut it off so that we just can't allow anymore.
Because people want to eat, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, trust me, if we opened the gates, we'd be a lot busier than we are now. But, you know, this is what we're going to keep it at for right now. And then we've been busy, you know, for what we have staff-wise compared to what we have. You know, everybody's, you know, glad to be back at work, glad to be making money. We all been doing good. So, you know, it's been working out so far.
That's good, man. Talk about what's being, so I know that as a former server, and really I missed the last job I worked, so pretty fresh at being a server. You know, a lot of servers definitely like to go out after work and go to bars and do that and the other. With everything that's been in place, have you noticed that, I mean, it's been working? Like, is everything, would you find that the safety protocols is really, there's like really no issues with people getting sick or anything like that?
There's no issues like with me. I mean, honestly, we've been having to get tested every 2 weeks. And since I've been there, I think we've had 2 positives. Those 2 people had to be out of work for 2 weeks, and they had to pass 2 tests within those 2 weeks to come back to work. And so, I mean, I felt safe throughout the whole time that I've been doing this. You know, I haven't, like I said, as careful as possible. I wash my hands. I don't touch my face. You know, as soon as I get home, I'll put all my clothes in the laundry, and that's it. You know, just try to be safe.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good to hear that. It's, I mean, because I know a lot of people that are in the industry, and from what I've gathered, you know, I had a buddy that was over there at Steak 48. Mm. That's another very nice establishment here in Houston, and they were doing good too with the safety measures that they had in place. Let's talk a little bit about something that is also new for you and is also happening during these times, and that is having a new baby. It's your first child, correct?
Yep, baby number one.
So, you know, you are currently going through what I'm about to go through very shortly. So it's definitely very beneficial to me just to kind of, for my own selfish reasons as well. But I mean,
yeah,
just,
man, pick my brain. Go ahead. Ask me questions.
I'm just curious. I'm sure other people are. What have you done? What's kind of like your mentality now that you have, you know, a new human in the world, but it's kind of this new, different world, right?
I mean, whether you like it or not, there's these feelings that come over the top of you, okay? The overwhelming love you have for this child, and that you're like, oh, no, of course I'm going to love my child. Yes, but it's different. As soon as that kid's born, it's just something that's going to come over top of your body. Two, nothing else matters. Like, I used to get so mad over, like, the most ridiculous shit, like, whether it was traffic or just stupid little shit. Nothing matters anymore. The only thing that matters is that kid. And it's just crazy how everything else gets so small. Because she's the biggest thing in your life now, or in my life, I should say. So it's just how, it's funny how your world doesn't seem nearly as chaotic as it was before. Before, my life seemed way more, like, out of control. Now, my life isn't nearly as out of whack as I thought it was. Everything's just so quieted. Everything's easier. You know, I'm just so focused on the task at hand, raising my child.
Now, I'm pretty sure you've been, you know, practicing safety and all that with Corona and the quarantining. So, has it mostly just been mainly you and your wife that have had to take on the task of the baby, or have you had any other people, any other family members?
No, it's just us. I mean, that was a cool thing about when it happened. When we shut down on March 17th, I'd only been back to work for 4 days after paternity leave because my daughter was born on February 20th. So, like, I took off for a little while, and then when I came back to work, I went back to work for like 3 days, and then the whole country shut down. But it was fine because we were able to get a nice routine on the sleep and get a nice routine on everything else. So,
I mean, that worked out for you, right?
Absolutely. It was perfect. Yeah. Having two adults here and doing everything tag team style was perfect. It was a perfect scenario. You know, we decided that, you know, every night I would take the night shift at 11 p.m. all the way to like 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. I would take that shift and I would be up with the baby, feed her every couple hours. And my wife would just sleep for those straight 6-7 hours. And then when she got up at 5, 6 a.m., she would relieve me and I would sleep straight till noon. And she would take those. And then I'd be up with my wife and the baby from noon all the way till, you know, till night, till my wife went to sleep. So it worked out perfect. So we would both get guaranteed sleep. And it was perfect. And just shut everything else off. At least I tried. I don't know. I still watched the news and got all crazy with it.
Yeah, man. It's, you know, you talk about the news and the craziness that exists in this world. Mm-hmm. You know, and now that, you know, that you're a father, that I'm about to be a father, it definitely is going to make things a little bit complicated when you have to explain different things, right? Like why things are currently the way they are, or, yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's, like I've always said, regardless of what your position is, my issue has always been, why does there have to be hate behind anything, right?
Like
if you know, you and I are big sports guys, right? So I just want to use an analogy that what doesn't offend people. You know you're a Giants fan.
That's gonna be tough. Let's try not to offend people.
You're a Giants fan.
Yes, sir.
New York Giants. Absolutely. San Francisco Giants of New York.
The New York football Giants. Yes.
Nobody cares about them, but so I'm a Niners fan, you know, NFC champs. But regardless, if those two teams are playing each other, you know, there's going to be some shit talking between me and you. There's not going to be too much love during the game.
No.
So that's fine. That's
it's good. Accepted.
But at the end of the day, after the game's over with, or the next day, it depends on the loss, how bad or what happened. We're going to be fine.
How much money we lost.
We're going to be good. We're going to fucking, you know, shoot the shit and we're going to move on with our lives. But in today's world, people are just not able to disagree and go, okay, well, we don't agree on this. This is why. Okay, let's move on. People are just like, no, if you don't agree with this, then you you're
wrong canceled. And you're against them.
You need to be, yeah, you're right. It's like, no, it's like, we're all different. We all come from different backgrounds, and it's crazy, man.
If you want to keep on the football analogy, let's just keep on the football analogy. Okay. So game day, right? We both don't like each other. Yeah. I mean, the 49ers are trash. They've been trash. It's not the 80s anymore, or the 90s, whoever the hell you guys thought you were. Anyways, after the game, we have a concept, like a common goal in mind, right? We love football. That's our common goal. We love football. We both like love to talk about, you know, who threw, you know, how many touchdowns, or did you see that running back go off on that guy, or did you see that hit that so-and-so put on that dude? There's a common goal there. So whether or not we both have a disagreement at that moment in time, afterwards, like you said, there's still, so we still have some commonness. We still have a common thing in mind, and that's the love for football. So it's the love for humanity. Neither one of us want to die. You know what I mean? So like, why can't we just agree on some other shit in between then?
And that's what I was kind of hitting at earlier, was there shouldn't be that hate, right? Because if there's that love for humanity, if at the end of the day, the only message you're trying to send is, hey, I think that everyone is equal and everyone should have the same access to everything, and that's it, then that, it's fine. And I think what people end up doing is they say, oh, you believe that, then you're also like a Marxist, or you're a communist, or you're this, or you're that, because those people, who usually is either the far left or the far right, and that's what people like to do. They like to point at like the left because the far left is fucked up, or they like to point to the right because the far right is fucked up. The far anything is fucked up.
I'm sick and tired of whatever left, right, Republican, Democrat, whatever you think you are. I like to try to find common shit in people. And here's my common thing I have right now. I'm a father. I'm a brand new father. I try to work really hard to support my family, to make sure that I have enough bread on the, table, and enough clothes on their back and a roof over their head. That's my goal. I know somewhere around the world, I don't care what your religion is or what you believe in, you also want to raise your child. You don't want any harm to that child. You also want to make sure that child has enough food in their stomach. I don't care what your religion is. That's what your goal is. You want your child to have enough food in their stomach. You want their child to be big and strong just like you. I don't care what your beliefs are. There's our common goal. None of us want to have anything bad happen to our families or our children. We all want to have that life where we raise each other and raise our families our own way. I get that. Cool. Do what you want to do. The moment you infringe on my beliefs by personally coming in and harming me, then we have a problem. But I don't care what you do. I don't care at all.
Yeah, no, man, I'm the exact same way. You know, I think people, you kind of hit a little bit on religion. You know, you don't care about what people believe. And I'm the same way. People can believe whatever they want because that doesn't matter to me, right?
You can believe in the devil. I don't care. Yeah.
It's like if you had a next door neighbor, right? And you had this great relationship with your next door neighbor. There was this one time where you were making this fucking cake and you ran out of eggs, and you went to his house and he had some eggs, and he's like, here, take this whole carton of eggs. I don't need them.
Yeah.
And
great dude. Thanks, man.
He's an awesome neighbor. And then, okay, so 10 years go by, you find out that he was a Satanist. Yeah. Look, if he was an awesome neighbor, do I care that he worships the devil? I don't.
I'm grateful that Satanist had eggs for my batter I needed, because I had waffles that morning. Yes. They were delicious.
And I say that to be extreme. I say that because people are so different. Like,
no, it's fine he's a Satanist, but until like he does something stupid, like burns an upside down cross and like sets my yard on fire because he decides to have like some Satanist shit going on in his backyard, you know, taking out some animal's life, then I got a problem with it.
Right,
but other than that, I don't give a fuck what you do.
Right? No, I'm not. He didn't do that. Remember, he was your neighbor for 10 years,
and he offered me eggs,
and he's moving, and you're kind of sad to see him go because for the 10 years, I mean, you played basketball together. Yeah. He'd come over, you shoot a couple of hoops. He was in your fantasy football league. This whole time, you didn't even know he was a Satanist. You didn't even know. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Ranch Houston, compromised of Ashe Yoga and Wellness, The Garden Project, and The Mill HTX, is an intentional, conscious organization created for adults to connect to an inclusive community through art, food, nature exploration, and movement, and for school-age children to empower themselves through education on sustainability and edible gardening. Everyone is encouraged to connect to the curiosity of their inner child as they nurture their nature in a world that so often encourages separation and fear. Minority and veteran-owned, The Ranch Houston is located south of the Medical Center, and you could visit their website at www.theranchhouston.com. I highly recommend it. I've been there. It's awesome. Check it out. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Apparel Up, the leading custom apparel provider in Houston, Texas. They help their customers represent their brand correctly with high-quality, long-lasting custom apparel. Whether you're in need of embroidered scrubs for your medical practice, embroidered polos for your nationwide enterprise, or screen-printed shirts for your sport team, they got you covered. They also do the apparel for my show, so definitely buy some of that stuff too. And you can find their website at apparelup.us. Check them out.
I got a buddy right now. I'm not going to name his name whatsoever. I just happened to find out that he's Jehovah's Witness, and I had no clue, and I've known him for 2 years now, and to be dead honest with you, I've had so many conversations and different little incidents with this man that I had no clue that he was Jehovah's Witness. And I'm not saying anything bad of Jehovah's Witness, I just understand they don't celebrate jack shit. It seemed like this man, I celebrate a little bit more than jack shit. You just don't know who believes in what these days, you know what I mean? And it doesn't matter what they fucking believe in.
No, that's the whole thing, man. It really doesn't matter. You know, I find it, that's what always gets me. It's like, why is it that because whatever you believe in terms of like political stuff, it changes who you are as a human being?
Oh, it automatically makes you something. So like if I'm a conservative, I'm a racist. If I'm a Trump supporter, I'm racist, which I'm not. Trust me, I'm not a Trump supporter. I was at one moment in time. I'm not a Trump supporter right now. That guy's a jackass. And don't put me on Biden's side either, okay? I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do right now, all right? I'm that guy in between that's saying I don't know what to do.
Yeah, man. It's definitely right now. I'm like you, man. It's when you look at both sides, there's so many flaws, right? And
absolutely.
And it's funny because one of the things I'm reading this book and it talks a lot about like third parties. What's the history of the United States? But you kind of see when there's third parties, and even as recently as like Perot, when Perot, you know, a lot of people can say Perot kind of fucked it up for Bush and allowed Clinton to get in because he took so many of Bush's votes, but. Yeah, you know, nobody wants that third party because those two sides are like, nah, man, like we're having enough issues as it is, just us two. There's no room for a third party.
It's a throwaway vote.
Right, right. But unfortunately, I feel like there was a big push for the third party before. And more recently, there's not. Now there's like this blind push. Like anyone who's pushing either side, you can ask them about all the bad shit and their response will always be, yeah, but it's not this or it's not that. They'll never defend it. They'll just say, but yeah, but it's not this or it's not that. Like your defense for doing something fucked up is not saying it's not this or not that.
Right, you can't compare something to that because obviously it's not that. That's not how you're going to get your point across.
Yeah, man. It's definitely a new world that we're currently living in with all this, especially you throw COVID on top of it, it makes things even more complicated.
I'm not huge on politics, man. It's just such a circus. The shit that they allow that goes on right now is ridiculous. You know, don't get me on like the Portland mayor, anybody in the fucking Northeast. Don't get me up on those motherfuckers right now, allowing the type of like vandalism they allow to their city. It's unreal.
No, man, when you see stuff like that, it really makes you kind of question, you know, what...
I'm glad I'm a Texan.
Oh, well, there's been this like this exodus of people from California, from New York, coming to Texas.
Right, right. Because they're over all the crazy BS that's allowed in their like city and state. They're over it.
Yeah, no, I mean, one of the things that I've heard people say, and I got to be honest, I'm a believer of that, is when you saw the stuff that was going on, I've always been pretty kind of anti-gun, you know, but when I saw what I was watching on the news and how certain cities, and especially when you had the George Floyd murder happen and that guy's from Houston, to me, I was like, well, I don't know. Shit could pop off. It's been popping off in other places. I'm definitely seeing a lot of hostility. It's reminding me of like what could be a civil war. So then I was like, maybe I should get strapped, because I'd rather be safe than sorry.
I have one. Absolutely. I'm not going to be that guy that's not prepared when shit hits the fan. Absolutely not. There's too much police going on right now that don't even want to show up to calls. They're too afraid to try to handle police situations that, you know, they're going to get reprimanded or fired. And who wants to be a police officer right now because of all this? It's rough.
It's real rough. I had a little disagreement with a buddy of mine, and he was saying, you know, that the police is not is kind of, their job isn't as stressful and as difficult and demanding as they say it is. And I'm like, look, man, like, no one's going to sit here and say that every single police officer is getting shot at every day, or like, no one's saying that. But if you take the police officer job as a whole, from, you know, everybody around the country, there's fucked up shit happening every day. Like, it's just a matter of when is it going to be your luck of the draw, you know?
I mean, they serve the community. They're not just showing up for like gun violence and rapes and robberies. No, they're servicing the community by showing up to rental disagreements, freaking someone stole a candy bar from a gas station. Like, there's all kinds of ridiculous stuff that they do show for. They call it, so they're showing for a lot of domestic stuff too. They're helping people. They're mediating between a lot of situations, and those situations escalate. And you got to have a certain person that has the confidence. They lack the I'm losing my freaking concentration over here. They have the, I don't know. You need that kind of person that can handle the outrage that someone comes over top of them. You know what I mean? They have the patience is what I'm looking for. Patience. They need to have unreal patience to deal with the humankind right now. You know, they need to have patience.
Yeah, man. I think it's not about what happens. It's about preparing for what could happen.
We need more funding. They're talking about defunding police. We need more training. We need to figure out who are these bad cops. Get their asses out of there. Okay. I don't care if it's all up to the chief of police that's allowing all these bad cops to continue to have their jobs. Fire his ass too. Get some young, brand new chief that wants to be in there, that wants to do good in these communities. You have unreal training. I mean, you can do psych evaluations every 60 days. I don't care.
Yeah, no, I completely agree.
And a purple belt on every police officer.
Yes, yes.
A jiu-jitsu purple belt on every police officer that actually knows that, a minimum, that knows actually how to hold people down without like losing their capability of handling it.
What you're talking about is what I think should happen, is that you should have basically, they're like Navy SEALs. They're like these highly trained individuals who have, like you said, they've been evaluated.
But they need to even be better than Navy SEALs too, because Navy SEALs don't
deal. Pretty tough though.
Yeah, but check this out. Navy SEALs don't deal with the civilian interaction that police officers do. So they also need to be like as heightened as like physically trained as a Navy SEAL. On top of that, they need to be a freaking, you know, a psychiatrist. Being a police officer is one of the hardest jobs in the world.
I think you should have like partners.
Oh, of course.
You should have one that's more focused on handling with focus his training or their training, him or her, on more of the people skills. Because you're right. I mean, it's a lot of social skills, people skills, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, man.
Trying to, you know.
I think it's number one over physicality, you know.
For the most part, yes.
Yeah.
It's just
like a 70-30 balance.
But the physicality, when that gets out of hand, your life is in danger, right?
Yeah, and you need to have more cops that can handle themselves. There's too many videos out there where cops all of a sudden lose the upper hand and you have a criminal over there freaking wrestling for their gun or their taser or their pepper spray. It's like, they got to have better training. Like, it's unreal how many people were just handing guns over to you.
No, I completely agree. People talking about defunding the police or, you know, taking away their money. I'm like, look, I don't know. I know they the government gives them a lot of money. I don't know where it's going, but what I do know is that police officers are not trained to the level that they need to be trained.
Nope.
Whether that's physically, just in terms of the, you know, and let's just be honest, there's a lot of fat cops. I mean, it's just, without blasting you, fat cops, but you, I see you. And if, if you're going to sit here and tell me that you're going to run somebody down if that situation occurred.
Well, I've got a friend who's ex-military, who's a police officer right now. And he's told me that he wouldn't have at least 80% of his fellow officers have his back in a crazy situation. He just wouldn't. Either because they wouldn't be able to physically perform or they're just not mentally able to handle a stressful situation. He's done several tours overseas. So, I mean, we need more people like that. We need ex-veterans that are willing to be police officers instead of just throwing some of our vets away, you know, and saying, well, go back into the wild now.
Yeah, no, it's a tough gig.
How about job security? As soon as you retire, you have job security. We need more security for schools. We need more police officers. We need more security for these vets that can just like not, you know, get let out into the world without a job. I think that's a huge thing too.
Oh yeah, man. Their
skills are so valuable to us.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, when you're willing to put your life on the line for your country, I mean, they should be taken care of, you know. Yep. That's a pretty big sacrifice to make.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that's a whole discussion in itself, man, on how they get mistreated. And I mean, I'm not gonna go too much into that because I'm not an expert on all the details, but
they just don't do much when you retire. That's it. You retire. They don't give you the skills to deal with regular civilian life. Like afterwards, they're just like, there you go.
They're like, they're putting the fish into the ocean, right?
Yeah.
Setting them free.
Yeah. And it's different. Some of these guys have had hard combat, you know, situations where they're still on high alert. And so, you know, I mean, they can't just kind of go into civilian life and act normal. You know, they're always sizing up situations when they're sitting down, sitting somewhere, you know, looking for exits, you know, who's a threat, who's not a threat. That's not real. You're in a Dairy Queen, you know, but that shit happens though. And they don't prepare you for that. So it's just nice to get them into a certain job that helps them kind of like acclimate into real civilian life.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. So let me ask you this, Richard. Where do you see yourself heading? I know with the baby, recently married, I'm sure that's, you know, completely changed the way you saw things, you know, five years ago.
Yeah, the whole world's different, man. It's crazy. The whole world's completely different than it was 5 years ago.
Where do you see yourself headed? What are some of the plans you have in the works or just things you just thought about?
Well, for one, just being a good husband, being a good father. I'm looking forward to having another child. We're not expecting. We're just wanting to have another child for sure. Staying in shape, man. I signed up for my first full marathon in January. I've done several half marathons, but this is my first full. So just staying in shape and being a good husband and father, working hard.
How many miles is full?
It's 26.2. Don't forget that .2, man. That shit sucks. Well, it's going to suck.
And you've never done one before?
No, not a full.
26.2 miles. That's a lot.
I know, right? Sounds scary.
So when are you doing that?
It's in January, so I have time. Okay. I have time to train.
When I got here, you were telling me you did, how many, 7 miles today?
Yesterday, I pumped out 7 miles, yeah. Felt good, though. The weather's been real nice.
Okay. Do you have like goals on like what you want to be able to do? Are you going to try to do the whole 26 before marathon time?
No. The max I'm going to do, I have like a little training plan that I found online. It's a little screenshot on board. It's like 20 miles. I think week it's like a 20-week plan. I think like week 16 of the 20-week plan, it tells you to do like a 20-mile run. So it gets up to 20 miles. But then you do a bunch of like 12s and 11s and 10s, but it pumped up to 20 before you do the 26. I know.
Yeah, you know, I...
But I can eat whatever the fuck I want right now. It's great.
Yeah, because you're just burning like crazy.
It's awesome. I ate so much ice cream last night.
Yeah, I've actually... I've been thinking about running again, and just because it's a good way just to burn weight, you know? Yeah. I like working out too, but when you run, I mean, you're just burning.
Yeah. I mean, I implement 2 days a week. I do CrossFit. So I do different little weight training things. I just bought a new little band setup. So I'll do some resistance training with those. It'll be cool. But that's just twice a week. Like the 3-4 days a week besides that, I do just strictly running. Whether it's like more sprints or if it's more like steady runs. It's just strictly running though.
How's your diet? Have you made any changes to that?
I mean, I do eat good, but I mean, I stray. Like, I definitely stray at night. But I mean, I eat good. My wife cooks, like, the most unbelievable meals. She cooked this penne pasta with some pesto in it. Turkey meatballs, which sounds kind of crazy, but it was really good. But then she'll do, like, a ground bison with black beans and corn and cilantro and jalapeno and onion. Like, a whole kind of, like, a hash. Pff, I can live off that shit, bro. It's real healthy for you.
Do you get it from your job?
H-E-B.
H-E-B, okay.
Yeah, I just get like some of their ground bison they have there, and she'll do like a whole medley of that shit. And I just eat it just like that, man. It's good.
I don't think I can recall having some ground bison.
It's good, man. It's good. It's good for you. I'm looking to get some elk, and I'm actually, if anybody knows anybody out there, man, I know one person though. I'm gonna hit her up. I'm trying to get an elk or deer. I'm trying to get on some land out here in Texas. I'll pay you. I'm gonna shoot some animals out here, I swear.
I might have you on that.
Oh man, that'd be great.
I got a buddy who his buddy has a big piece of land, and
I've been looking into it. I'm gonna get a freezer. I'm ready to stock something and shoot an animal, man. I'm ready.
Yeah, he went last year, got himself one, big one, and he's also a butcher.
Man, after this...
So he butchered it up, too, and it just...
After this, man, give me his card, give me his number, he can throw me a price, whatever he's got, and we'll figure it out, because I'm ready to get that going. I miss some elk or some deer, it's good.
Are you going to butcher it yourself?
No, but if he knows someone... I mean, I can gut it and skin it, I can do that, but I can't butcher and cut out like steaks or do all the ground meat or anything. If he can do that, that'd be dope.
I'm sure you could work out a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I want to go too.
Like, I got the greens if you got the skill. Like, but I want to shoot the animal for sure.
Of course, of course. Yeah, I mean, like I was saying earlier with the whole, you know, wanting to get a gun for safety... You know, another thought that crossed my mind was like hunting and survival. And like my girl's mom, they have like this very fancy garden. So, you know, spinach and watermelon, tomatoes, jalapenos, a lot of herbs and spices also. But I was thinking about meat. Like you got to have the greens, but you also got to have the meat.
Oh, yeah. And stocked. I mean, I want to get a little garden going too. We used to have that back in the day, but man, you got a freezer with a couple hundred pounds of meat because you got an elk or a deer or something like that. Like, and you got, you know, loins or rump roast or steaks or ground meat. Hell yes. You just pick one out. It's the best. And it's yours. You know where it came from.
Exactly. It's the convenience of it, right? Like literally you would be home one day and you just go, hey, what should I have for dinner? You know what? Right. How about a nice backstrap?
Absolutely. And it's like, it's not the click of a button. I understand where you just click of the button and like it just shows up at your door. Yes, there's more work in it, assholes. You got to go find the thing. You got to, you know, make sure it's the right one. You got to shoot it humanely. And then you got to go on there and you got to skin it. And yeah, it takes time and work and energy, you lazy fucks.
Yeah, and it's rewarding. I haven't done it. I don't know if you've ever done it.
Yeah, I've been hunting a few times. I grew up hunting with my dad.
Oh, wow.
And we used dogs before, or just regular, you know, scout where you sit up on a ridge and just kind of see where the game trails go. And I never did a tree stand. That one kind of seems a little weird to me. We just sit up on a stand. Never done that one before. We've done a lot of scouting where you just kind of figure out what route the animals go. You know, you got check out the freaking wind so you're not up or downwind from the animal and all that. Use dogs, which people don't like as well, but you kind of have to when you use dogs on a bear or a mountain lion. We've got mountain lion, raccoon. Yeah, we've been hunting a lot back in the day, but it's been a long time. I'm ready.
You said mountain lion? You went hunting for mountain lion?
Yeah.
How does that taste?
It's good, man. I never ate it besides jerky, but it's good.
Okay, yeah. I'm curious, son. I want to eat a lot of different types of exotic animals, like bear. You ever had?
Yeah, a bear. I had bear steak. I had bear jerky.
How was that?
Bear, real good.
Bear steak?
Because it's kind of greasy, especially for like the jerky. It's got like a good fat content on it. I think I love it.
Yeah, I've never done bear.
I've eaten damn near everything, man.
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, I know you got people out there that are going to say, oh, you should be vegan or you should be this, that. We are designed to eat meat. That's how we evolved.
Yeah, man. I got thumbs and a brain. You know, I know things taste better. I know my body functions better when it's got some, like, you know, meat in it compared when I just go on a strictly... I've gone on a strictly vegetable and fruit diet. And then I've implemented back red meat in my diet and I function better. So,
you know, I'm interested to see on this this lab meat. Supposedly they're going to make this lab meat that tastes and...
Hello.
Yeah, we're back.
Yeah, we're back.
Technical difficulties, folks. I don't know what happened, but sound was lost, but now it's been found. What were we talking about?
We're talking about some laboratory meat that I'm not down with.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like some synthetic weed to me. Or some of that, like, bath salts that those kids were getting all crazy on eating each other. You know, yeah. why are you making stuff synthetically when you got, like, the real deal out there?
No, I agree. I mean...
Like a fleshlight? You got that, like, the real deal on the left, but you're going to choose the fleshlight?
No, I agree. I think that if it tastes good and... See, me...
For real?
Here's the thing. I don't care about texture. I don't care about, because, you know, some people are always slimy. I'm not going to eat it. To me, if it's delicious, I'm going to eat it. So if it's some lab made steak and it's delicious, I'm going to eat it.
Yeah, but like a Big Mac is delicious, but I can't eat a Big Mac on a regular basis, bro. That shit will kill me.
No. We're not talking, but I mean, what I'm talking about.
What are you talking about delicious?
No. What I'm saying is if the lab meat steak and it's not bad for you, it's just like a normal steak. And we're talking about hypotheticals here, you know?
Well, here's the other thing I have with that. They don't know the long-term effects of this shit.
No, I mean, I'm definitely not going to be the first one in line.
I know the long-term effects of eating elk that I seen up on a ridge that I shot.
No, elk meat is definitely really good for you.
Oh, man, I can't wait to get some of that. Or deer.
Yeah, well, so when do you know when it's the season? It's coming up, right?
Texas is year-round, baby, if you got the ranch. That's the cool thing. 98% of this state is civilian-owned. There's no other state in the U.S. There's 2% of this land is government-owned. Every other state in the U.S. has the government has way more land. Try to get a state park in this bitch. Ain't happening.
No, we have state parks.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, like, because the state's so big, 98%. is like civilian owned. That's crazy.
Yeah, I want to I definitely want to get a couple acres, you know. The house I just got is like just like the starter house, but definitely sell it in like 10 years, you know, try and make a little profit and then just buy a couple
that's
acres.
That's the goal, like a little flip. Yeah, that's the goal.
Get a couple acres out in kind of the outskirts of Houston.
Yeah, I'm trying to move out to the burbs. There's more bang for your buck out there, man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you just took like a quarter million dollars in like Montrose buys you this small little old house, $250,000 in Pearland buys you
right.
a ginormous house.
That's like newer built.
Newer built. Big backyard, big front yard.
That's actually where we're thinking about is Pearland. just because of location, it'll help out with my job. We thought about the other burbs, and Pearland, location wise and bang for your buck, is pretty decent spot.
Yeah, I think you'll be good to go next year. I think next year is probably your best bet when it comes to the housing, because I think the houses are going to, a lot of people are going to lose their homes next year. And I think that's when they're saying will be the best time to buy. Right now it's okay, but...
Which sounds kind of fucked up, but whatever. Take it.
What's that?
It sounds kind of fucked up, but whatever. I'll take it, man. I'm selfish when it comes to my family. Hey, you tell me next year because someone failed on their mortgage, I'll scoop it up.
Yeah, you know, I mean, unfortunately, the way the shit has gone down this year, you know, it's really hurt a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people still aren't working. Bars are shut down.
People aren't working. People don't have the same amount of money. And the thing is like, you had a lot of people that, you know, one of the things you should never do, and we all kind of are guilty of doing it, is when you plan on making a certain amount of money for like that year.
What, so, they thought they were going to get the unemployment forever?
Well, not even that. Just even before COVID hit, like people that were working that were like, okay, I'm making, you know, X amount a week.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, unemployment might have helped them for a little bit, depending, you know. And then
too many people hung on to that, man.
Yeah.
Go back to work. If you can. I was going to say, if you can.
Yeah.
If you can. There's a lot of people that did have the opportunity, though, and they decided to go ahead and just stay home.
Yeah. I mean, they made them a tough offer. I mean, they're like, wait, do you want more money than what you were doing if you were working? I mean, in my opinion.
Or you want that long-term security.
If you couldn't work, then unless you have a condition where you're jeopardizing your health, then either you work or they take away your unemployment, because unemployment is for people that, A, their job is, you know, you don't have a job and you're looking for a job, or B, something's wrong. Like, right. You can't physically work.
Right.
But other than that, you gotta do your part.
I went back to work because I had to. Tell you the truth, I didn't really want to. But I was like, I think I need to go back to work right now. I think I need to take this, you know, offer back, because they offered me back the job. I need to take this offer because I might not get it if I wait. So, no, I kept it.
How have people been responding to y'all? Like, are they like more, are they kind of grateful? Like, hey, you guys, we appreciate it.
Oh, for sure. For sure. That's the overwhelming, I think, feeling from the guests. That they're, you know, they're excited. They're stoked that we're back. It's good, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. So how long were you out of work for?
It was like 2 months. Yeah, 2 months. March to May. Yeah, March 17th to May 21st. Yeah, 2 months.
2 months of like a little kind of a mini vacay, but not really, because you just had a baby.
It was fine with me, bro, to be honest with you, because I paid some bills off, took some vacation. It was fine with me. I had no problem with it. Let's chill.
And now you're back at it.
Oh, yeah. Ready to roll.
Do you think that it's going to be back to like where it was soon? Like how long would you say until, or, I mean, have they told you anything, or what's the projection of when they...
No, they haven't said nothing. I don't even know.
That's probably more of a governor thing, right? The city's
gonna... I'm fine with it. The mask sucks, but it's going to be around for a while. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. Hopefully, maybe there's a little leniency when the holidays come, because I think the holidays are going to be good this year, huh?
Talking about canceling Halloween in LA. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But you tell me the one day a year where kids actually like wear a mask.
Yeah, but LA is doing shit a little bit crazy.
Yeah,
right?
They are crazy.
That's why people are leaving.
Yeah. Dip.
That's not happening here in Texas. Nah. There will be Halloween.
You got like 150,000 people homeless in California. That's crazy.
You have, I think they're doing football games here.
What? Who is?
The Texans.
Mm.
And I even like high school. So, yeah, we don't give a fuck.
Mm-mm. Nope. Texas is different. Texas is different.
Yeah. I do love that. It's like, I hate it in some ways, but for the most part, I'm like, well, you got to take the good with the bad, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
If you want to be like this, just if you enjoy the fact that you can just do whatever the fuck.
I got 11 hate with Houston.
Yeah.
I got 11 hate.
But I'd say there's more love than hate.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, Richard, I actually have to get ready to go to work.
Word.
It was good having you on, buddy.
Yeah, man. This is cool, man.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. Y'all have a good one.
Peace.